You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people. But somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast, with more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.
From Points Unknown, this is Safety Wars for Wednesday, February 11th, 2026. I can't believe it. Well, today is my grandmother's birthday, so she would have been 120, I think. What do you think? No, 112. So, anyway, we're happy birthday, Grandma. Wish I could be celebrating it with you. Anyway, today, I did not pack up the whole studio today. Normally I do, so you're getting everything from me directly. I'm not even going to cut in any sound effects here. I'll be back in studio tomorrow night, God willing. Essentially, this is Safety Wars. What do we talk about? We talk about safety in the news, some current events, if they interest me, basically whatever interests me. What let me point out by saying that this is all of this stuff, and I don't have the intro but ready to go, but all this stuff that I mentioned on here is my opinion and opinion of Safety Wars. This is not the opinion of Safety FM or anyone else out here, and the advice I give is peer-to-peer advice. And so now that we got the formalities done, let's move on right into it. I did a very foolish thing over the last couple of days here. I actually went and I had an online discussion with someone. Didn't know, as usual, you don't know who you're dealing with necessarily. You don't know their personality and things of that nature. But we both agreed on one thing, that we both have the workers' health and safety in mind. Workers' health and safety is priority. With everything, right? We don't want anybody to get hurt, to get killed, anything like that. Now, there's different ways that you can get there with worker safety. Currently, the debate is safety one or safety two. And I'm glad that is that debate, safety one or safety two, because 40 years ago, it would have been take your chances with OSHA, and that we have, we expect people to die and get hurt on these jobs. When I got into the business in 1992, that was one of the things is, well, we have this big job here. Someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to get killed. And, you know, that's part of doing business. And we've slowly moved away with it. And by the way, if you're working with smaller companies, that's often the, without professional safety people or without people who have ever had safety training, that's often their attitude. So what's the debate? Me and this other person. He is in the behavior-based safety world, has multiple books, a lot of research, and a product that he sells related to safety one, behavior-based safety. And for a review, what is that? That's, I mean, it does work for certain companies. It does work in a lot of ways. So what is that? Where we're going to put matrices in there. And some of them are built into the regulation, total recordable rate. No, we're going to be investigating accidents. We're going to be doing all this stuff and generating data. And then we're going to hopefully go and try to do accident investigations. We're going to try quote-unquote traditional safety. And what do you get? You get all the, and you do get accident reduction. No doubt in that mind. Why? Because it's tracking things that you could track. You could track an accident rate. You could track the total recordable incident rate. You could track the number of near misses you get. You could track everything. And what the idea is that you track this stuff, you investigate stuff, and then you all of a sudden come up with solutions, and you implement those solutions and enforce rules, enforce procedures, hopefully going out there and being non-antagonistic, and you create safety that way. Right, long and short of it, it's much more complicated than that, we all know. But that's what we see in the field happening is with safety one or traditional safety. The problem that we have with that is this. You're a business owner. You're a business manager. I'm sorry about that. I'm getting all these updates coming up here. So you're a business owner, you're a business manager, you're maybe a site manager, you may be a site supervisor, you may anything, any one of those. And what companies have done is that they have often put in incentives for their safety. Right? Does that make sense? Even if it's unofficial. They put in incentives for their safety. So, for example, you report a accident, regardless of how you're going to handle it. If you're going to handle it legally, like a legitimate company, perhaps getting workers' comp involved, reporting accidents and injuries, and everything else, as that goes down, how is this managed? We know pie in the sky stuff. How is it actually managed? It's managed by documentation. Maybe you might do an accident investigation. Maybe you may do a million things. And then what happens? End of the year, management review comes in. And this is actually what has happened more often than not, like an overwhelming majority of times with the organizations I've worked with. Well, you were, we'll just use a name, Frank. Our regular name. Well, Frank, that's your annual review. And, we do the annual reviews in December. And you know those three or four accidents that you've had? And Frank is just sitting there. Yeah, boss, I know what those accidents, I've heard of them, I remember them, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, basically, that cost the company, right, you had six accidents, that cost the company about $120,000. So you know that promotion that you were waiting for? Do you remember that bonus that you were going to get? Well, guess what? We have to take this $120,000 we spent. You're not getting a bonus. That's what happens in the behavior-based safety world. That's what happens with Safety One. So now what's the incentive? The incentive now is we're not going to report accidents or injuries because that's what the incentive is. You just lost this guy tens of thousands of dollars in a bonus. maybe that accident cost the company to go and redesign a system that they've only had problems with one time, and that was with that accident. Maybe the company is involved in some kind of multi-million dollar lawsuit because you, the site manager, are negligent. Or you, the safety person, who doesn't have the authority to hire, fire, discipline, make changes, or motivate anybody. Why? Because you're not the one that's involved in pay. You're not the one involved in authorizing work. Now you end up, what's the incentive? There's an accident, son of a bitch, that guy didn't had this. He's an idiot. Now guess what? That's going to cost us $30,000, $40,000, $100,000. There goes my freaking bonus. So what's the incentive here? That's going to cost me this, that, what have you. I'm going to look stupid in front of everybody else. And believe me, that happens. Now the incentive is we're not going to report accidents or incidents. I've actually been told by plant managers of companies that you have heard of. Companies that you are familiar with. Companies that are mentioned in Bruce Springsteen songs indirectly. That look, we're having too many first aid cases here. What's going on? So what the incentive is not... So what it is, well, why are we having first aid cases? And how do we fix that? That's not what the question is. Why are they being reported? And by the way, if you're going to report these things, now you go through what in the old-fashioned communist safety struggle, rethemed for the workplace. You're a bad person. Shame on you. Blah, blah, blah. And what the thing is, we get the idea that all this stuff is good with safety one because, look, we now have a system in place for reporting things, for investigating things, and everything else. And look, we're all safe because our accident rates went down. Well, maybe your accident rates went down because of the way it's being managed in the field. Again, this is a generalization. You may be working with the most fully self-actualized people in the world out there. They're wonderful. They're nice. Right? They don't have any stresses. You don't have a perverted incentive program at your workplace. And all this stuff works great. You have this. You're tracking things. Everyone's, and we're, hey, kumbaya. Right? We all join hands. We all do this. We all do that. Right? You may be working in a situation like that. Now, yeah, I'm in a hotel lobby. Now, safety two, human and organizational performance. You're out there with the five principles of HOP. You're out there, no shame and blame. You're out there learning some leadership, trying to influence people here, trying to get answers, getting data driven. We got data the other way too, but God knows how good it is at the average company. And you're out there, and this was the criticism. Safety one, you could show results. You have X number of accidents reported beforehand. You have X number of accidents reported afterwards. What happens with human organizational performance? Hey, Jim, hey, we've been having this issue for a long time here. I can't get anybody to freaking fix it, right? So you're out here preaching, yeah, please report things so we can fix things. You know, the last guy out of here, when we reported things, it was like hell to deal with, and he'd come out with ridiculous solutions, and it was usually paperwork, and it was usually this, and it was training, and this. And so, well, rather than going and asking us, hey, how would you fix this? How do you think this should happen? Now you're in the safety two world. You're in the safety two world if you're going out and you're saying, you know, we're going to realize what the context people are working in. We're going to realize that maybe these people are under undue stress with something else, either at home, in the workplace. We can't do too much at home. We're not going to get buddy-buddy with people, but hey, in the workplace. What's the context? Why did that seem like that was the right thing to do? Maybe if there is a major accident, rather than the inexperienced safety person who's never done that job, and maybe a plant manager or somebody else who did that job 20 years ago, maybe they're not going to get involved. Hey, let's involve the worker. Let's try and figure this out here. And, you know, we're going to set up a learning team, and we're going to learn from our mistakes. We're going to go and figure things out. We're going to try to prevent things and everything else. That's how safety, too, is managed. And it's more depth and more in-depth and detailed, right? Where you're not going out there and shaming and blaming. You're not going out there being adversarial. Basically, you're not being an asshole, right, with that, which is what often safety one handle, right, deals with, right? So on the extreme of that, you're going to have, more often than not, your accident rates go up because you're getting a more honest and accurate assessment. More on that in a minute. You're going to be getting, more boo-boos, all this. Now you're getting all different data. You may not like the data. You may say, the data, and in your head, you're ready to rip the rest of your hair out if you're me. But you try to keep that inside. And you try to be helpful. And and everything else. How do you measure that? Because one of the arguments is, when we started to do safety too, human organizational performance, all this stuff got reported. Well, I got news for you guys. Most of that stuff was already happening. Never got reported. Now what happens is we go and we fix things. The other thing is this. Because you're going out there and with the, you're collecting statistics, you're collecting this, you're collecting that, blah, 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 blah. How much of that is accurate? I've been at facilities where we don't know why this catastrophic incident happened. We don't know why this fatality happened. All of our site audits said that we were 98%, believe me, this is the God's honest truth, 98% okay in all of our audits, all our field audits. How could this happen? Well, did it ever occur to you that the stuff that gets you killed may not be the stuff that gets you hurt? You're not going to, right? You could go out there and you can find a million housekeeping issues. But you're ignoring, right? You got your blinders on, right? See no evil, hear no evil, smell no evil, speak no evil, right? We're not gonna go over there, man. Why? Because that's all that goes into it. Now they're gonna tell you, well, safety one, if you do it right, you gotta be nice. You have to do this. Again, for it to work, you need both. You need safety one and safety two. Because there's some people that, because you might need to be a little bit more harsher, like on the safety one. You may have to get human resources involved with some of the things. Well, that's an acknowledgement. Safety HOP practitioners will always acknowledge out there that, human resources doesn't go away. You may have to discipline people. You may have to do this. You may have to whatever. The HOP, but what happens more often than not with behavior-based safety is very harsh and puts in the incentive to not report things. Think about that. Now, let me mention this before I forget. How do you measure not being an asshole? Ever think about it? You have books out there in the popular press, The No Asshole Rule. You have other books. You have the Hare's checklist for psychopathic or sociopathic indicators, which I believe is essential out here. You have all different types of cultural surveys out there, all very subjective. Safety 2 or behavior or human organizational performance is not meant to collect statistics. It's meant to improve the corporate culture and get more data by essentially being nice, not being so critical of people, not being a jerk in all of this, making the incentive to work safely and promote working safely. Rather than the other end, traditional safety, where we're going to go out there, we're going to concentrate on what goes wrong. Well, let's try to promote what goes right. Will accident rates go up? Yeah. You know why? They're being reported. Will that often happens. Maybe you're finding out more data and you're able to go and you're able to fix things now. Where rather than twiddling your thumbs running through Scantron cards or whatever it is, now an app, through something saying, look at how good we're doing here. You're saying, you know what? Maybe we're not doing so good after all, and maybe we need to fix that. The other thing, what people don't talk about here, statistics. We're forced to keep statistics, either by contract. The insurance company likes to see statistics out there with your insurance company, and they like to show that you're doing things, and maybe your client, you're working for a major oil company. The oil company says, oh, look at this. This company is fantastic. We could go and we could work with this company because look at these. They have the nice safety program here and everything else. Okay, great. Wonderful that you're able to do that. With that, we're forced to keep them. But what happens? Oftentimes, and this is what happens, I have had clients that do exactly what I just described. Then what happens? We're not going to be able to work with this big client if we have a TRIR over an amount. We're not going to be able to work for this municipality or state contract or federal contract, the high TRIR rate. Well, all these numbers are all fouled up, these statistics. So you know what we're going to do? We're just not going to report things. There are very large companies that do not report things. Don't report, doesn't make it through. Hey, everything looks good. Then what happens? I had a client that on every project that they were involved in, they treated people like, if you look at the old, and I forget the name of the episode, Star Trek The Next Generation episode, when Picard gets abducted by the Cardassian, right, Union. And he's being tortured, and you have the four lights. And how many lights are there? There's four lights. No, wrong, there's five. And they, all right, torture him, right? There are times I've been in that with these tribunals that they set up. One with a very prominent company out there. Why did you get cut? Why did you get cut? Why were you using a knife? Why weren't you using shears? Why? And then what happens? We're not using shears. The company didn't supply them. But you know you should have been using shears. You're a bad employee. You're shame on you. And they may not say that, but they communicate without words. And doing that. Right? And what happens? Well, at the end of the year, you have to sign off on that OSHA 300 log. Right? Somebody does. Somebody has to sign off on paperwork that maybe goes to an insurance company, that maybe goes to a larger client, maybe to a government entity. We haven't had any injuries here. We haven't had any problems. We haven't, knowing that you're putting in an incentive for people not to report things. So now, therefore, know what we call that? What do you think we're called that? Fraud. That's called fraud, folks. When you don't report things and you say everything is wonderful, look at us, we got the good insurance rates because we have no accidents, let alone that they're taking the person out the back gate and putting them on that person's private health insurance. Or maybe we're going to just hire everybody as a 1099 independent contractor and they're in our responsibility and pray that and hope and pray, because hope is, of course, you know, a safety tenant. We got hope, right? We can build things on hope. We're not going to do that. We're going to go out there and we're going to do all that. That's called fraud. Back to my one client, there was in the state that they were in, 2-year statute of limitations. And so we all know that an employee has a problem suing their employer. You're going to take the workers' comp program, whatever that is, the payout. You know you're going to take that, right? because it's almost impossible, unless it's some type of gross negligence, and I'm not an attorney, you're not, and you sue the employer successfully. Not going to happen. Typically doesn't happen. What happens is the employer says, because they have no liability, that mid-level manager and that field supervisor has no liability in the case. They screw up, they might get fired. Might not get the promotion, may not get the bonus, but that's it. The company, oh, screw it, it's a workers' comp situation. We ain't going to worry about it. Blah, blah, blah. We're the only ones that are willing to do the work at this price, so screw it, we're always going to get the job. Oh, yeah. So what happened? There was a 2-year statute of limitations to sue the general contractor because the employee is not an employee of the general contractor. So 1 year, 11 months, and 2 weeks after an alleged accident happens, what do you think happens? You get in the mail a summons, or you get legal paperwork. You get a notice that you're going to get sued. Right underneath that statute of limitations. One client I had this going on repeatedly, again and again and again and again and again. Right? Constantly sued. Well, that comes out from a different thing. And then they, you know, I said, look, no, Jim, we're still having these accidents. What would you do? A lot of things that we would do to fix that. Number one, don't have this perverse incentive system. We want to know about the accidents and the incidents. If they don't report things, there's the gate, because guess what? Now we're battling out with insurance companies and attorneys and spend. And again, time is money. Number one. Number two, human organizational performance. Do a cultural survey, which we do here at Safety Wars. And then that's how you manage the safety. So going back, full circle here. Safety one or safety two, you need both. Need both. Some organizations do wonderfully. I'd like to know which ones they were, because I've, in 33 years, I haven't seen one, right? And smaller businesses are not going to be able to implement safety one to its full capacity anyway. So, or safety two, which one? Guess what? You can't be pure safety two, because then nothing gets done. Why? You're worried about being nice. So what do you have? You have them both together. Maybe in the middle, maybe a little to one side, a little more to the other side. You figure out what that is, and that's what you're, why you hire a competent manager, a competent safety person, to find out what's going to work better. So things get reported. So when I hear, well, all the data says that this prevents accidents, right, from the safety one people. Yeah, it prevents reported accidents. Right, your assumption is everyone's honest. Everyone, the incentive is working towards that. On the safety two end, we try to deal with people like human beings to try to get them to be not to be adversarial, trying to see what goes on and design our work areas so we don't have human error. Right? All in the design. It's all in the setup with that. And that's where you want to be. You don't want to be on the other end where you're actually in the field having to correct things. You want to be in the setup with that. And thus is my monologue for Safety Wars, and we're going to be right back with you in a minute. Now, some of the news today, some good news, some bad news. We're doing pretty good at the Olympics, right? Should want to do an Olympic recap here, all right, on this here. Maybe we'll do that later on. Now, later in the week here. Now, on a personal note, I always get a little bit upset when the Olympics comes on since my father died, because other households they like football, they like baseball, we like baseball, right? With us, me and my dad, it was always the Olympics. It was always the Olympics. I mean, everything stopped to watch the Olympics. I remember that was a majority, not on cable where you got the hot, or anything. And I tell you what, during the Olympics on a Saturday, he's home from work. I tell you what, he was so freaking into it. And I was into it. I enjoy watching it. So go Team USA. What else do I have to say? We're very proud of you out there. So I got some bad news here. I just got off the phone with my wife on here. Dawson's Creek legend James Vanderveer has died at the age of 48. Here, he had a long-term battle with stage 3 colorectal cancer. If you haven't gotten screened, go and get screened for that. I know with me, I had a number of polyps removed at the first time I went. The second time, nothing really, one polyp removed. It was really not a big deal. No big deal with that. This is from a statement posted from his wife, Kimberly. He met his final days with courage, faith, and grace. There is so much to share regarding his wishes, love for humanity, and the sacredness of time. Those days will come. For now, we ask for peaceful privacy as we grieve our loving husband, father, son, brother, and friend. And he, here's a quote from, and maybe this will help some people out there, from the 2024 interview with People, right? Before cancer, God was something I tried to fit into my life as much as possible, he told NBC's Today show. After cancer, I feel like a connection to God, whatever that is kind of the whole point of this exercise on this planet, right? And then he goes on to say, what am I? I meditated, and the answer came through. I am worthy of God's love simply because I exist. And if I'm worthy of God's love, shouldn't I also be worthy of my own? This is in line with my branch of Christianity, Lutheranism, where basically which says you're good enough. You're good enough for God's love. Christ's sacrifice on the cross is good enough to atone for your sins. I know I don't want this becoming a religious thing. But rest in peace and there. And, you know, don't like to see anybody passing away out there, especially from this kind of illness. So on to some safety news here. FAA, and this is from CNBC. FAA abruptly halted El Paso flights over Defense Department's plans for an anti-drone technology. And again, there's a couple of different stories out there on this. So El Paso halted all flights for 10 days and then lifted the order on Wednesday, hours later. The FAA cited security reasons for the flight ban, and some Democratic lawmakers pushed for answers on sudden changes. The Trump administration said it disabled Mexican cartel drones and had breached U.S. airspace. My question here is this. Can this lead to an escalation? Well, you're gonna say, well, Jim, what do you mean? I said, well, you keep invading a country's airspace, you're gonna eventually have a problem. My problem here is were these actually Mexican cartel drones, or is this some type of a false flag to make an excuse? Unfortunately, we have to ask questions like that today, because of the way things are. If you've been, listening to everybody talk about the Epstein files out there, it seems like this. It seems that the, we've been dealing with conspiracy theories for an awful long time here with everything, right? Now, I started finding out about these conspiracy theories sometime in the 1990s, 1992, roughly, spring of 1992. And now everyone said, oh, you're full of guvno, you don't know what you're talking about, you blah, 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 blah. And then Stanley Kubrick, right, came out with a movie, late 1990s, 1999. It was starring Tom Cruise and his then wife, Nicole Kidman, Eyes Wide Shut. And I know that the other wars out there was talking about this today, but let me talk about this. When that movie came out, everybody was like, wow, this is, oh, this is a fantasy. This is what this is. Apparently, if you read the Epstein files, not so much fantasy here. There's some pretty sick people out there. Hold your kids close. Support your children. That's what I'm going to tell you. And... is, well, this kind of stuff doesn't happen. I know, and I was personally involved in a case. I wasn't a victim. I wasn't a perp. But known of, witnessed, that sort of thing, of a case when I was a child that were with a whole bunch of adults, and it was a conspiracy. With certain organizations, child organizations, they've settled a lot of stuff out of court. Again, widespread conspiracy to go after children. A family I know, good Christian family, known them for years. Have a daughter. Daughter got involved over COVID, right? She was one of those children that, you know, a little bit tough, right? Some children are nice, easy. Some children, not so nice, not so easy. You know, by the way, that's the way life is, right? And what ended up happening was during COVID, she went and got involved online with some people because they spent all day at school on this or on the computer like I'm talking to now. They ended up going out there, and she was recruited by not so nice people in town. Eventually, she ran away, joined these people, and she eventually came back home. Blah blah blah. She was gone for 2 weeks. The all point search, the whole nine yards. And about a week and a half later, family in the neighborhood. No, it was a small New Jersey town, so everyone basically knew each other or knows each other. They said, "Hey, my son," and their son is sitting right there, teenage son. "My son was on Snapchat. And is this a picture of your daughter? Is this your daughter?" And she was on a video doing heinous things on the video. We'll leave that, right? And it was one of these child sex cults that she got involved with. And they're still, that was a number of years ago, they're still dealing with this. Nobody went to prison. Nobody was charged with this or anything. Right? And they are out there. This is not a made-up story here. There's another family I know of. Their child had emotional problems. Real bad. Non-diagnosed, but she was under a psychiatrist's care, getting medication and everything else. She got on to a chat, and again, during COVID, because of the damn cell phones and everything else, and she got recruited by another sex cult. Now, these two families don't know each other here. And everything else, eventually, she went to the her psychologist, said, "Look, this is not good. This is not normal. This stuff happens." Unfortunately, with the Epstein stuff, the stuff that's coming out, I'm not even going to go into. You can go and you can look that up for yourselves out here. Horrible. Keep your kids safe. So this is some other stuff that came out with that El Paso airspace stuff. Trump administration shoots down a party balloon with a laser after mistaking it for a cartel drone. This just came out this afternoon. Right, and the chaos began when anti-drone technology was deployed near the southern border to target what officials initially believed were foreign drones. The object was later identified as a party balloon. Right, with that, thank God they didn't spend a lot of money shooting that thing down. El Paso, and here's some NBC News. Another story from this morning. Right, military testing. So I don't know. Is this a false flag or not? I have no idea. Apparently, it's a balloon. You're gonna love this one. Smart underwear tracks gut bacteria by measuring flatulence. Didn't the Mythbusters do this a number of years ago? Scientists have created a wearable sensor that attaches to your underwear and tracks your gut bacteria in real time by measuring the hydrogen gas in your flatulence. And no, that's not set up for a joke. This is from studyfinds.org. Researchers at the University of Maryland developed a device to solve a problem that has plagued microbiome research for years, how to actually monitor what gut bacteria are doing hour by hour, not just for what species are living in there. The answer, it turns out, involves a tiny sensor clipped near your bottom that passively records while you go about your day. Data while you go about your day. This in a study of 38 people published in Biosensors and Bioelectronics X, the device detected dietary changes with a 94.7% accuracy and revealed something surprising about human bodies. Participants pass and guess, you're going to love this, people, an average of 32 times per day. Far more than 10 to 20 episodes people typically report in studies. Either humans are terrible at counting their own farts, or we're all walking around in collective denial. I just read it, folks. All right. We had a mass shooting in Canada here. So shooter in Canada kills 9 people and injures 25 others at school and at home. This is from Vancouver, British Columbia. Shooting at a school in a remote northern British Columbia left 7 people dead, while 2 or more were found dead in a nearby home. Canadian authorities said Tuesday a woman believed by police to be the shooter was also found dead, apparently from a self-inflicted wound. The fact that this is a woman is weird in itself. Normally these are men or boys doing this on here. So 25 people were wounded, including 2 who were airlifted to the hospital with life-threatening injuries here. Blah, blah, blah. So they will not release a name. The police and the shooter's motive remain unclear. He added that police are still investigating any connections here between the perpetrator alleged and something with that and the victims. A lot going on with AI here. So this is from semaphore.com. An anthropic safety researcher quits, saying the world is in peril in part over AI devices. Miranka Sharma said the safety team constantly faces pressures to set aside what matters most, citing concerns about bioterrorism and other risks. Anthropic was founded with the explicit goal of creating a safe AI. Its CEO, Dario Amodè, said at Davos, again, I've been to Davos, so, right? And that AI progress is going too fast and call for regulation to force industry and leaders to slow down. Other AI safety researchers have left leading firms, citing concerns about catastrophic risks. 2 key members of OpenAI's Super Alignment team tasked with steering AI development quit in 2024, saying the company emphasized financial gain over minimizing the dangers of building AI systems that are much smarter than us. Claude, so this is also related. This is from Axios.com, article by Madison Mills and Ashley Gold. Claude, which is a model of AI, right? That is a program here. Could be misused for heinous crimes, Anthropic warns. Anthropic's latest models display some vulnerability to be used in heinous crimes, including development of chemical weapons, the company said in a new sabotage report released late on Tuesday. So, again, you can find out all different stuff on AI. Apparently, Anthropic owns Claude Opus on here. I tell you what, it could be used for good. It could be used for evil with that. It's an extremely lengthy report here that they released public. What's the introduction here? I'll read the intro real quick. The risk report argues that Claude Opus 4.6 does not pose a significant risk of autonomous actions that could contribute significantly to later catastrophic outcomes, which we refer to as sabotage risk. We limit our scope here to threats caused largely by model actions in this way and do not address threat models or intentional harmful actions by humans play a central role. We argue that the overall risk is very low but not negligible. That's what scares me, right? Low, but not negligible. Nothing's ever zero. This report follows up on a note in the system card for Claude Opus 4.6, which stated, quote, we have committed to writing sabotage risk reports on AI R&D for RSV standard for all future frontier models exceeding Opus 4.5's capabilities so as not to rely on difficult and subjective assessments. As such, we have prepared a sabotage risk report assessing sabotage-related risks. So, So, AI, so what's a threat model? Right, sabotage is when an AI model with access to powerful affordances within an organization uses its affordances to autonomously exploit, manipulate, or tamper with that organization's systems or decision-making in a way that raises the risk of future catastrophic outcomes. For example, by altering the results of AI safety research, either inadvertently or due to its pursuit of dangerous goals. Again, these AI models have a tendency where you have to, where it learns who you are, basically, with that, and what your goals are. So it matters. AI and now, I tell you what, listening to a lot of the financial reports over the weekend, this past weekend, AI, you know, do we use it as a tool here? Yeah, we use it as a tool here on the Safety Wars. Do we rely on it? We use it ethically here to help us do the work, not to do the work for us. And I think that's where people get mixed up here. With all of this stuff, is that they let it do the work for them. How many times have we found AI incorrect? Guess what? A lot of times, especially in the safety world. Heineken slashed up to 6,000 jobs in AI productivity savings amid slump in beer sales. Dutch brewer Heineken, which their main office is here, one of their main offices is here in White Plains, not too far from our home studio. Dutch brewer Heineken is planning to lay off up to 7% of its workforce as it looks to boost efficiency through productivity savings from AI following weak beer sales last year. The world's second largest brewer reported lackluster earnings on Wednesday with beer volumes declining 2.4% over the course of 2025, while adjusted operating profit was up by 4.4%. And basically what comes down to is that they're using AI for what? I don't know. It does not mention that, but they're going to be cutting things, right? U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright visits Venezuela to assess oil industry overhaul. It's from the Associated Press this afternoon. U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright arrived Wednesday in Venezuela for a first-hand assessment of the country's oil industry, a visit that further asserts the U.S. government's self-appointed role in turning around Venezuela's dilapidated energy sector. I remember back in the mid-90s, they were recruiting people like me to go down there. Stuff not pursued, right? Path not taken. Wright met Venezuela's acting president, Delcy Rodriguez, at the Miraflores presidential palace in Caracas. He's expected to meet with government officials and oil executives. So as I know nothing about the upstream. I don't want to say nothing. I know a lot about the upstream, more than I let on. All right, but this is what I do know. A lot of this stuff has been sitting idle since the early 2000s, which would indicate to me, if it's from the early 2000s, means it's going to take anywhere from 2 to 5 years to get up and running again, because they have to assess the issues. They have to, you just don't flip the switch. You have to assess the issues in the oil industry. You have to rebuild things, modernize. A lot's changed the last 20 years. We just talked about one thing right now, AI. So them saying, well, we're going to go and we're going to take the oil in Venezuela. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Guess what? It's going to take 2 to 5 years to fix everything, to get everything up and running. That's Jimmy's prediction on here. With that, which means you're going to need successive administrations that are committed to doing this. Here. What else we got here? We'll save all the Department of Labor news and EPA news for tomorrow night. But here we have, this is from Matt Schumer on X. He has a blog on there. So here we have, think back in February 2020, if you were paying close attention, you might have noticed a few people talking about a virus. If someone told you they were stockpiling toilet paper, you would have thought they'd been spending too much time on the weird corner of the internet. And then we went to things were overblown. And he says, I've spent 6 years building an AI startup and investing in the space. I live in this world, and I'm writing this for the people in my life who don't, my family, my friends, and people I care about, keep asking us, so what's up with the deal with AI? And getting an answer that doesn't do justice to what actually is happening. I'm giving them a polite version, the cocktail party version. Right, because the honest version sounds like I've lost my mind, and for a while I told myself that that was good enough reason to keep what's truly happening to myself. Right, so he goes on here. Right, here's the thing nobody know outside the tech quite understands yet. The reason why so many people in the industry are sounding the alarm right now is because it's already happened to us. We're not making predictions. We're telling you what exact already occurred in our own jobs and warning you that you are next. For years, AI had been improving steadily. Right, so this is from on X by Matt Schumer on his blog. He links. Right. Even though I work in AI, I have almost no influence about what's going to happen. Right. So it happened to me first, blah, blah, blah. For years, AI had been improving steadily. Big jumps in 2020. Our new techniques for building these models unlocked much faster pace of progress. And then it got even faster. And then even faster again. Each new model wasn't better than the last, so it was better by a wider margin. And the time between new model releases was shorter. I was using the AI more and more, going back and forth with it less and less, watching it handle things I used to think required my expertise. Then on February 5th, two major AI labs released new models on the same day. GPT 5.3 Codex from OpenAI and Opus 4.6 from Anthropic, makers of Claude, one of the main competitors to ChatGPT, and something clicked. Not like a light switch, more like the moment you realize the water has been rising around you and now you're at your chest. Quote, I am no longer needed for the actual technical work of my job, end quote. And I'm going to go on and read it. Let me emphasize that. This is this guy saying, who's worked in AI, I am no longer needed for the actual technical work. I describe what I want to build in plain English, and well, it just appears. Now, let me and it goes on and on and on. It's a very lengthy article here. All right. Basically, AI is now building the next AI, which, if you look, I believe that's Isaac Asimov, or was it in the Star Wars movies, where it was perverse for a computer or a machine to be building another computer or machine, right, with that. And there was a prohibition against that. Now, I've been warning about this since 2024, when I started using this stuff. We as safety professionals are going to be obsolete in most of our capacities. Why? Companies are going out there and are marketing the whole thing with what we started out the program with, was Safety One. We can make this easier because we're going to go out and we're going to manage all this data for you, collect all this data for you. We're going to be able to give you trends and tell you everything about I know organizations already doing this, where they're taking all the safety audits, putting it in there, and coming up with trends, coming up with accuracy stuff, saying, for example, Jimmy Poulsel isn't doing his audits out there, so therefore, Jimmy Poulsel isn't doing his job, and he's a bad person. And guess what? When he does do these audits, they're all falsified. I don't do that, but you get the idea here with this. where it's going to be weaponized against us and already has been weaponized against us. The safety people, your own people. There is a company that's named after a river in South America that I personally saw. They had an auditor there following around the employee, right, with their smart device. Boom, 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 making safety observations, not communicating them. Why? To build up a database, to data mine, and everything else. So more and more, what's my point? More and more, the Terminator is coming true with this. Right? At a certain point, at what point is this going to be used against us? In a big way, not only for learning and knowledge and everything else with that, but there, here we have a real danger of becoming obsolete. Sci-fi becoming reality. The Matrix, which was mentioned in Jay Allen's book. The Terminator, another one. Any number of Star Trek episodes from the 1960s. On forward. From The Prisoner, the famous British TV series. All of this stuff is making, that's what the new safety war is going to be. That's a new frontier. We want this. We want flesh. We want person to person. We want safety too. Person to person. Treating people with respect. Treating people with kindness, with empathy. Uniting. No, the world being united. People getting along. None of this hate that's going out there. Unfortunately, this is being used to promote hate also. That's all I got for tonight. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel. I will see you, God willing, tomorrow night.
You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people, but somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast. With more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.